SOP270. He's done over 700 interviews. Today we pick the brain of Bob Andelman, better known as Mr. Media.
It's the School of Podcasting's morning announcements. Here's Dave Jackson.
Podcasting since 2005, I am your personal podcast coach, Dave Jackson, thanking you and you and yes, even you for tuning in here where we talk about all things podcasting from planning to promoting to producing to monetizing. If it's about podcasting, we talk about it right here, courtesy of the School of Podcasting.com. If you'd like to reach me, I would love to hear from you. You can email me, dave@schoolofpodcasting.com. You can call in your comments, courtesy of podcastvoicemail.com. That's 888-563-3228. Or you can leave a comment out at our website, which is schoolofpodcasting.com. Today, not going to say a lot right here, simply because we've got about a 20 to 30 minute interview with Bob Andelman. So with that, I want to thank you for tuning in, and here's Bob. All right, well, joining me via Skype, by request, you know, when you have those DJs, by request, long distance dedication, one of the listeners said, hey, you know how you mentioned that Mr. Media guy did 700 interviews, maybe you should get him on the show. So I went to Bob and said, hey, Bob, you have done over 700 interviews. We would like to suck the info out of your head. So Bob Andelman, MrMedia.com, thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me, Dave. Good to see you. Good to talk to you again.
And I know you're an author. You've written, it looks like, a ton of books, including Why Men Watch Football. Is that yours?
That's mine.
And then yep. The Profiler and The Profit Zone and all sorts of other ones. I'll link out to Bob's store out at the website again. That's schoolofpodcasting.com. But Bob, for those of us that don't know you, why don't you give us a little bit about your background?
Well, I've been working as a freelance writer, doing first magazines and newspaper articles for many years, and then the last 15 years focusing on books. I'm basically a professional co-author. You might say a ghostwriter, except that I usually get credit for the books I work on. My name is pretty much always on them. But I work with people who have some expertise, maybe in business or something else, have a great story or great information to share, and they'll usually bring me on to help tell their tale.
How did Mr. Media, where did Mr. Media come along?
Back in the prehistoric days in the last century, about 1994, actually, I started doing a weekly newspaper column called Mr. Media. And in about 96, I guess about 1996, it was picked up by Universal Press Syndicate. They distribute Doonesbury, and I think they had Dear Abby or Ann Landers. I think it was Dear Abby, things like that. And it was different than what you hear as a podcast today initially. It was a collection of interesting bits of information that I'd pick up every week, maybe a great funny quote from a celebrity, or I'd tell you about a great magazine story you ought to check out, that kind of thing. And then gradually, as the web developed, I started adding URLs, and then we started near the end. I ended the column in 98. I started adding celebrity interviews. And the problem with it was that newspapers did not understand it from 1994 to 98. Newspaper editors didn't understand what a URL was. Nice. And so it was very difficult to put it in the column, and they were extremely long then. We didn't have the shorteners we have now. And editors just didn't get it. Most newspapers weren't even on the web at that point. You know, it was 13, 14, 15 years ago. So jumping ahead, I put that aside. And about 5 or 6 years ago, a friend of mine hired me to do some interviews for an animated, like a claymation type of thing called Creature Comforts that was on CBS for a couple weeks in the summer. And that show didn't survive, but to do it, I had to buy a digital tape recorder. And so when the show didn't survive, I had this great piece of technology in my hands and needed something to do with it. And I thought, hey, maybe now's the time to bring back Mr. Media. So I started doing it was February of 2007, and I called it Fridays with Mr. Media. And every Friday afternoon, I would record an interview with someone fairly famous. The first one was David Simon, who was the creator and producer of Homicide on NBC, and at that time, The Wire, which was just starting to wind down. And since then, it's grown from one a week to, in any given week now, I may do 6 or 10 of them.
Now, one of the things I wanted to ask you about before we get into interviewing is, you actually are one of the kings of deliver the media however you want people to consume it, because you have a YouTube channel, then you also have a podcast in iTunes. Obviously, this is it's something that you can listen to. It doesn't necessarily have to be a video, but it is kind of nice to see the person you're interviewing. Do you have any kind of – without I don't want to actually know your numbers, but in terms of percentage-wise, like what percentage of YouTube versus like podcast listeners, audience – how is that makeup made up?
No, it's a good question. I find it depends on who the subject of the interview is. Hmm. Certain people are huge when they go to YouTube. Usually, people who are related to television. For example, Brittany. Oh gosh, there's a young actress who is on the. Harry's Law on NBC. I can't think of her last name. She's actually from the Tampa Bay area where we do the show, just by coincidence. And that was the first video that I posted. And it wasn't even video with her. I just took the audio and added images from the show. And that, to this day, is probably still the most popular video that I've posted. Thousands of people looked at these flat pictures.
Wow.
and listened. And then usually anything that's TV related does very well on the YouTube channel. And then everything else does well on audio. Actually, and now I also have a Vimeo channel, and I'm posting most of the interviews first to Vimeo because that format seems to work best with all devices. It shows up on iPads and iPods, as well as Android, whereas I was having some issues with YouTube on the iPods. And the other issue there was that Vimeo, you can post any length of video.
Ah.
And YouTube, when I started, it was only 10 minutes, and then it was 15, and they recently notified me that I can post any length on YouTube. So I'm still kind of, you know, balancing out where is the best place to be. But I think that the quality on Vimeo is better too.
Well, there you go. Well, you are Mr. Media. You should be able to have any length you want, doggone it.
Yeah. Well, I try.
One of the things I've noticed is you're, because I'm looking at you, we have a video going here, is you use a headset and yet it's really clear. So we got to talk a little gear. What kind of headset are you using?
It's Logitech. It's my second Logitech. It cost about $70 at Radio Shack. I liked my first one. I had it a long time, and then my chair ran it over.
Been there, done that.
So I decided, well, it served me very well. And that one was $25. So I went out and upgraded to this one. I'm very happy with it. The only problem I have, and maybe one of your listeners will actually have a solution for this. I do the show on an iMac. It's probably a 4 or 5 year old iMac. And sometimes, no matter how I set up the preferences, it decides that it wants to record me using both the headset and the internal mic.
Wow.
And so I don't know that, and I don't find that out until after the show has been recorded, and it just makes my head explode.
Well, let's talk a little bit about interviews, being that you've done 700 of them. That's insane. How do you prepare for an interview?
Well, I guess it depends on the person I'm going to interview. If I'm interviewing an author, I make damn sure that I read the book.
Here's a novel
which always
idea.
Surprises these. Yeah. Well, you know, it sounds so obvious to me,
but it's not.
A lot of the authors I've had them on the show, and they say, you really read the book. I'm like, well, yeah, how could I talk to you about it? And, you know, sometimes I may not read, if it's a novel, I may not actually read the very last chapter or so. So there's no chance of me giving anything away in conversation. Mm-hmm. But generally, I try very hard to read the entire book. And if I do that, I think I can feel pretty comfortable about making conversation with a person about what they do. That's the best starting point I think there is. I try to be familiar with the person. I don't want to be a stalker. I don't want to know every intimate detail. But I want to feel like I have some sense of their motivation, or enough to be dangerous and ask provocative questions based on what I know, without sounding like an idiot or asking stupid questions.
Well, do you go out and like read, like do you Google interviews for this person and go out and read past interviews to try to avoid asking the same things over and over? Or?
No, I try not to. A lot of the people I have on the show, and this is an advantage you have with the podcast, I try to book people that I have an interest in. Even if they're new authors, for example, if they're authors, or if they're TV stars or movie stars or radio personalities, you were on the show, and you were on the show because I saw School of Podcasting, I think, on Stitcher one day, and I decided to give a listen. And I thought, hey, this is really cool. I enjoy this. This guy's got some interesting things to say. I've been doing this for 4 or 5 years. I'm learning stuff. And I thought, this would be a good guy to have on the show. And because I have an interest in what you're talking about, it makes it easy to have a conversation.
Well, that's the thing I've noticed when I listen to your episodes, is it seems like you're just having a chat with people, as opposed to here's a question, you know, kind of thing. It's obviously there are going to be questions because that's why they call it an interview, but it doesn't seem quite so, you know, rapid fire interrogation type.
I've had my daughter, my almost 15-year-old daughter, sit in a couple times and ask questions when I've had someone on the show that she's been interested in. Like she loves the sci-fi TV show Eureka. And so last week I had one of the writers from the show on. He's actually the story editor on the show. And I said, now when you ask questions, listen for the answer and then think about it for a minute, even if you have to pause, and maybe ask your next question based on the answer. Don't just go to the three questions you have written, because everyone and their mother can tell you're just reading from a page.
So what do you think are, because to me, when I do an interview, that's the hardest part, is you're listening to the answer, but you're also in the back of your head kind of thinking, okay, what should I ask next? Do you feel that's the hardest part of doing an interview? And what are the other things that kind of somebody that's new to interview should be thinking about?
Well, preparation is important. I mean, I don't want to undersell preparation. I do, from the beginning of doing this as an audio podcast 5 years ago, I do write up a script. I do work from a rough script so that if I start seeming like an idiot, if the conversation is rambling, I can bring it back to something. But I'm always open to just going off script at any time, depending on what the person says to me.
Well, I know one of the basics tips is, you know, never ask somebody a yes or no question. Do you have any tips for somebody if you interview somebody? Because sometimes just because they're going to get interviewed, you would think they want to talk to you. But have you ever had somebody who's kind of just giving you yep and nope kind of questions, and how do you get them to open up?
Yeah, that does happen. Sometimes it happens with the TV star interviews when the networks trot them out for 2 to 3 hours of 8 to 10 minute interviews, and you're at the end and they are just sick and tired of answering the same questions. And that's where I try to be a little more prepared than usual, because I always write an introduction to each show where in that introduction, I try to set a tone of being a little provocative. And by provocative, I don't mean I'm going to ask them about their sexual proclivities or that type of thing. But I know some of the things have been written about the person, or I've heard about them before, and I want to take them in a different direction. So, I try to have a different view, a different angle. I try to make a connection. In the introductions, I always try to make a personal connection. For example, I'll give you an example. I interviewed the director of a new documentary on a writer from the late 19th century, Shalom Aleichem. He's the guy whose stories became Fiddler on the Roof. So I interviewed the director, and in thinking about it, I remembered my first connection to Fiddler on the Roof was being in eighth grade, and my high school put on Fiddler, and I worked on the tech team backstage, and I got my first and my second kisses from girls who were in ninth grade. So I set the tone for the interview and by saying in the introduction that I owe Shalom Aleichem my thanks because of him. I got my first kiss and my second kiss. And that was so different than what the director was expecting. And but it was still complimentary. You know, it wasn't like derogatory and it wasn't off the rails. We wound up being able to make some connection in the interview based on that. And so we were able to talk about things in a slightly different way.
Yeah, and I would think that just, again, sets a nice kind of tone to the interview, makes them kind of feel at ease that, okay, you know, it is going to be something a little different. So it's going to kind of crack that whole boredom thing going on of, okay, they're going to ask me about this and that. You know, they're ready to pull their string and give their standard answer. So when you kind of throw them a curveball, but not so much a curveball that's going to hit them in the head, it's got to be a nice change of pace.
Well, and that one was especially funny because every so often my mom checks in on the show and will watch or listen. And she wrote to me within minutes of listening to that show. She said, "Your first kiss." She said, "There's a story about you I'd never heard."
Well, do you have any, looking back at your, I mean, you've got a ton of interviews. Do you have any that stand out that you go, yeah, that one was kind of above and beyond maybe some of the other ones?
I have some favorites. One that really tickled me and goes to the same point of setting the tone in the introduction was last fall I interviewed Raquel Welch when she put out her latest book. It was called Raquel Beyond the Cleavage. And I thought, okay, if you're going to talk about cleavage in the title of your book, then all bets are off. Then I can talk about anything I want. And I'm of an age where, you know, when I was a teenager, Raquel was still, you know, she was probably in her 40s, let's say, and still pretty damn hot and, you know, desirable. And I flirted with her and I said it right up front. This is an interview for me, folks, not for you. If you enjoy it, that's fine. But I'm going to talk to Raquel Welch, and I'm going to feel free to flirt. And she got a big kick out of that. And we talked about, you know, I asked her things that, you know, I don't know, probably she's been asked, but maybe not the way I asked. We talked about some things. And then I said, tell me the truth. I said, somewhere there have got to be nude pictures of you locked up somewhere. She said, no. I said, what? You know, so, you know, we talked about that. I asked her also about her daughter, Tani, who, did pose nude for Playboy. And I asked, and I figured, you know, it's been 20 or 25 years since her daughter posed. And I assumed that it was not a big deal, but you could tell that she was getting her hackles up a little bit being asked about that, that she did not approve. That was something she didn't feel was appropriate for a young lady to do. And she was not happy that after all those years of denying requests to pose herself or to, you know, be topless in a movie or any of that kind of thing, that her daughter did. And, you know, it was quite a moment. And then so the end of the story is that I posted the interview and I added a lot of, and that one was only audio. I was still doing mostly audio then and it was only audio, but I added a lot of audio clips from her movies scattered throughout the show. It wound up being about 45 minutes. It was supposed to be a 20 minute interview and she just wanted to keep talking. You could tell we were having a good time. And the best moment for me was the next day when she personally tweeted what a great time she had on Mr. Media the next day.
That's cool. You know, that's now, are there any ways that you're monetizing Mr. Media as being that you have so much content?
Great question. Yes, I listen to School of Podcasting every week looking for tips. that's true, actually. You know, I'm not monetizing it yet as well as I would like. And I
joined the club.
When I started. Yeah. You know, when I started doing it, my attitude was to be patient and to give it as much time as it was going to need. I didn't push it real hard the first year or two because I wanted to learn how to do it right and, you know, to be professional at it. And so what I like to say is that first year was pennies and nickels in terms of ad revenue. And then the next year it was kind of dimes and quarters. The third year it was, you know, half dollars and singles. Then when I was getting the singles, it was kind of like being at a strip club, you know, it was like every so often, you know, you'd get a really good tip. And then, you know, this past year, it's been like fives and tens. I'm really good at the content and I'm less good at the back end stuff. I recently switched over from Blogger to WordPress because I wanted more ability to do, search engine optimization. And it just seemed like no one that I talked to who was doing a really successful podcast was on the Blogger platform. And as much as I liked it and had used it for years and as easy as it was, it seemed, from a search perspective, it seemed to have limitations, which seems very odd since it's owned by Google. And so I'm looking for more opportunities on that end. Now, where I have made money from it is as a, I guess in retail they would call it a loss leader. It's a secondary marketing tool for me. I don't come right out on shows and say, "Hey, I'm a ghostwriter or I'm a co-author. Here's a commercial for me. Call me and hire me to do your book." But it has had that impact over the years in that it has put my name and my interview skills out on display. Anyone can see the show, and you know we get loosely about 2,000 to 2,500 visits or downloads a day that I'm roughly able to account for. So it's out there in the ether, and from that perspective, it's been a very good marketing tool.
How hard was it to move from Blogger to WordPress?
There was a learning curve, and I had used WordPress for a site that was related to Mr. Media because I do the Mr. Media content goes out to 30 or 40 different sites, some podcast aggregators, some social media places, some RSS feeds. It goes a lot of places. And so I had a little experience with WordPress, but not the commercial version. And it took me about a month to get it all straightened out, to understand which plugins would work with what my content, which didn't. I had all kinds of problems with the feed. I formally switched over from FeedBurner to FeedBlitz, and actually now so FeedBlitz is feeding into FeedBurner, and there's been some issues there that I've had to kind of work through. But you know, I went into it knowing to be patient and not expecting that in a day or two it was all going to work out. And in the end, I'm very happy with it. It's a living, breathing thing, more so now than it was on Blogger. And, you know, it's evolving. I got my daughter involved. My daughter is now old enough where she understands a lot of the possibilities better than I do, and I'm perfectly happy to hand those off.
It sounds like today most of your interviews are coming to you, like you're not having to approach people. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's a little of both. There's some people that I go out and seek, and generally I don't get as many. If I could get everyone that I wanted, then I could turn down a lot of the ones that approach me. But you know, it's a point of availability and people's time and that type of thing.
Well, if somebody wants to interview somebody who's, you know, a big star, let's say I'll give an example. Let's say I want to interview Jillian Michaels, who obviously is just humongous. What would be the first step? How do you go about getting an interview? And maybe we can talk about different levels of people, because obviously, trust me, at least at this point, Jillian Michaels is untouchable. You just can't get to her. But what are some things people can try?
If it's someone who's on TV, you can go to the network's website, and then usually at the bottom, you know, the main website has all the information about the shows and that kind of stuff, all the fan kind of stuff for the viewers. Usually if you go to the bottom, there's corporate information for the network. I'd follow that string, go to corporate and then look for public relations or media relations, that type of thing, and shoot someone an email. 2 or 3 years ago, the networks were not as open to podcasts as they are now. Right. Now they recognize that they need to make their people available for podcasts. Now, not every podcast is going to get every person, but you know, if you aim a little low and start establishing that you treat people with respect, that you're there on time, you understand their time constraints, they will start to respect what you do and the show you do, and you'll get more and more opportunities. most people, as unapproachable as they may seem outwardly, there's someone out there who represents them. You know, whether it's an author or a TV star or a movie star, there are ways in. Sometimes it might be through a charity that they work with. Maybe they can, you know, put you on the right track.
That would be my question. Is it typically the publicist or like their manager that kind of has their ear when it comes to interviews?
I would think the publicist.
I would think it's the publicist. Yeah. So.
Yeah, I always the publicist. The manager is just going to get annoyed and may not turn you over to the publicist. I would always look for the publicist. Or if you get the manager's number, call the manager and say, "Hey, can you give, you know, because you're going to start with the secretary. I'm looking for publicist information for, you know, Jillian."
Gotcha.
Something like that.
Well, do you have any other tips for people that are looking to get into the interview game? Maybe because it's a great way to build your audience. The idea is hopefully whoever you are interviewing has some sort of audience that will then bring their audience to your show, and then they'll stay for more interviews as you continue to put them out. So any other tips for people that are, you know, brand new to interviewing?
Well, you know, like you say, and certainly when people are searching for something, they may find the name of the person you interviewed before they find the name of your show. That may be a hook to bring them in. So there is a real value to having people who have a certain name. I can tell you what I tell my kid. I coach a middle school girls soccer. And, you know, sometimes the girls are so excited and they talk, and then they don't listen. And I usually tell them, girls, listen, there's a reason why God gave you two ears and one mouth, and that's so you would listen twice as much as you talk. And so when you interview people, keep that in mind. Let them talk. They are your guests. It's like having a guest in your home. Let them talk. Listen to what they say. I guarantee no matter who it is, they're going to say something that you don't expect and that you can pick on and create a conversational thread out of that. And it may take you in places that you had no expectation of going. And then you can always come back to questions you prepared or other things. But you've got to listen. And if you want to have a reputation for being a good interviewer, you have to be a good listener above and beyond everything else I can tell you.
Well, thank you very much for taking the time out of your day to share some insights into interviewing and your background. And we'll have links out. Again, just go to MrMedia.com. I'll have links out to the website so you can go out and check out Bob's books. And Bob, thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you, Dave. Keep doing what you do. I listen every week. Everybody should.
Thanks. All right. And Bob will be appearing towards the end of the month on another podcast of mine called The Power of Podcasting. If you've been wondering, why should I start a podcast? Go out to powerofpodcasting.com. A lot of podcast success stories over there. So that's going to do it. Want to thank you so much. Again, if you're looking to start a podcast, come visit us at the schoolofpodcasting.com. If you need just a little bump to get over your technical hump, that even rhymes. Come visit me at podcastmechanic.com. I also do things like podcast reviews and things like that. And until next week, class is dismissed.